building an app. Listen up. With Nihilus, integrating with email and calendars has never been easier. Discover how 250,000 developers launched 40 times faster without all the headache. Start building for free at nihilus.cc/stackoverflow. Again, that's nihilus.cc/stackoverflow to start building for free today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, Nerd Gamer Edition. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, winner of a local in-store gaming tournament. Actually, I took second place. But nevertheless, I'm here on this podcast to talk about software and technology, and I'm joined by my daring duo from the content team, Ryan Donovan and Ira May. What's going on, y'all?
Not much. How you doing, Ben?
Well, like I said, I won a Magic the Gathering tournament, and I received a small pin, so I'm feeling on top of the world.
Yeah. And you're not wearing the pin today?
I can find my cactus pin. I can hook it up.
Yeah, we need a picture.
Speak amongst yourselves.
Pinsir didn't happen.
Pinsir didn't happen.
All right.
That's pretty good.
Shots fired. I'll find it. All right. But we've been soliciting listener input, and we've gotten about two or three so far. It's exciting. We're going to have one listener on to the show. And today, I would love to talk a little bit about a question which was raised by a listener. I want to hear more about the software job market. And so I did a quick Google search prior to the show, and the number one article that comes up is from January. And in January, the sentiment was clear. There is a slump in the AI job market. Software engineers are finding, you know, it's much harder to get a job than it used to be. January 2024, not so good. We're now in April of 2024. And if I search for news articles from the last month, things look a little bit different. There's a lot of articles about what is the new competitive landscape. There's a lot of articles about how do you get the skills you need to become an AI engineer because that job is in demand. And there's, you know, stories about areas like agribusiness and cybersecurity where the hiring has continued unabated. So yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts. I can dig into some of the details of these articles along with you, but what have you been hearing or seeing? Talk to me while I find my pin.
Yeah. I mean, just from seeing, you know, my LinkedIn feed, I still see a lot of people looking for new roles. People are getting new roles. So there is hiring going on. But it does feel like there is a little bit of a slump, a little bit of gun shyness about what's going to shake out. Ira, seen anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been hearing the same thing. It seems like there's not quite so much like industry-wide angst, it feels like, as there was when we had sort of like the waves of layoffs last year, but still a little bit of a sense of instability. Speaking of stability, one thing I wanted to mention to y'all is just that Stability AI has laid off about 10% of its workforce, which is about 20 people. So not, you know, a hugely unique event to be happening in tech, but interesting because this is really the first major AI foundation that's really had to cut its workforce since generative AI became the kind of, you know, tip of the tongue topic for everybody. So whether this is part of a like bigger market correction around like AI hype versus AI reality, or whether this is just, you know, this particular org has had a rocky few months, I don't know. But yeah, that's just something that was on my mind today because it's, right. I don't think we're used to seeing the layoffs and AI firms in the same headline yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is really interesting. I think that one of the things, you know, to think about here is that there was a period of time where the big players were not really doing anything too public or commercial in this space. They had big research arms, but they weren't commercializing it. And when ChatGPT came out, everyone said, oh boy, like this caught on, you know, with consumers, it got to 100 million users, fastest growing app. It just became sort of like, that was the media through line. It was like, this thing is a rocket ship. And so then Stability AI, which has had Stable Diffusion for a long time, and, you know, that has been one of the cutting edge models, is, you know, I think was seen as like, okay, this is going to be another one of these upstart challengers that, you know, can dominate the space. But OpenAI did something very different, which is like they cozied up right away to Microsoft, which took 49% of the company and provided them with a ton of compute. And I think, you know, probably helped to establish them in the eyes of potential enterprise customers as very reliable. Whereas you know, the CEO who left here is going to pursue decentralized AI, right? Like, was not interested in that.
Right.
Increasingly corporate version, was interested in the Wild West open source decentralized version. And I think it's hard for startups to compete because this business is extremely capital intensive. You have to buy a ton of hardware. You have to pay for all the compute and electricity. You know, you have to fight over great staffers who are getting $1 million salaries. And so, yeah, tough for a startup unless you pick a sort of big corporate partner.
Yeah, I think that has been kind of the takeaway so far.
I guess I think like the reality that, you know, that AI would come along and replace software engineers has not materialized at all.
Right.
And when you look at like the high profile examples of where AI has replaced jobs, I can think of two. There's Klarna, where basically they replaced the very first layer of what was already outsourced customer service. Mm-hmm. This does not seem like a, you know, revelatory thing. In 2015, 2016, you know, people were pitching chatbots that would replace call center workers. So, you know, maybe the latest large language models are better at it, but it's not like this was like a job considered to be at the top of the white collar food chain. And then the other one that Ryan and I discussed was seasonal hires of graders for these exams in Texas, where again, mm-hmm. you know, you're hiring 4,000 people for 3 months to churn through, you know, a million high school essays. It's pretty brutal work. And the essays are not at the highest level. And maybe this is something an LLM should, you know, should be doing with the right amount of human oversight or whatever.
Yeah. Having worked as a writing tutor and an English language instructor in, you know, college and graduate school, that's an area that I'm pretty comfortable outsourcing to AI just out of a wish to not have anyone suffer as I suffered.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if AI can write the SEO content and grade the student essays and be the first line of defense on a call center, that's a boost to global happiness.
Right.
In all directions.
That's a win.
In all directions. Yeah, that's a win.
Yeah, I mean, I think this may be, you know, there was a lot of a period with AI and AI companies sort of excited doing new stuff, and then, you know, a lot of difficulty finding market fits.
Yeah.
A lot of people sort of being like, what's the business case for all this stuff? And
right.
Stability seemed like it was always sort of like, let's make cool things and put them out
right.
for free.
Right.
So maybe they are reconsidering trying to find market fit.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I think it also depends on how much money you raise and then how much pressure you get from investors, right? Like if you raise a ton of money, then suddenly there's people breathing down your throat. You know, what does your business model look like and how's it working? You know, Midjourney is very different. For example, I think they have like 10 employees total. You know, they've been charging a fee to users for a while that hopefully is, you know, more than break even for, you know, the cost of generating the images, and they continue to do it in a community driven fashion. So I guess Midjourney will be an interesting sort of counterpoint to Stable Diffusion. Those two were very similar in my mind, merged sort of at the same time with these breakthrough text to image offerings. And so, yeah, interesting to see what happens.
For sure.
I'm going to add one more data point here. This is from Marketplace, which is part of National Public Radio, which I consider to be a decently objective and like they at least do their research news organization. Once upon a time, working tech was the place to be. Salaries were high, demand was booming, careers felt secure. Now the story is changing. The tech sector added 260,000 jobs in 2022. Last year, 2023, it added 700, and that number is expected to shrink even more in 2024. I don't know if I really expect it to shrink. I think that might be inaccurate. So I think we'll have to see if 2023 was an anomaly or not. But obviously going from adding 200,000 plus jobs to adding just 700 feels like a huge shift for people who have worked in the industry. And there was a boom from 2010 through 2020. Pandemic was crazy. 2022, most hiring we've ever seen. And then, you know, a brutal correction. So we'll see how it goes from here. Yeah. I guess one other thing that I would say is two of my friends who were laid off or left work because they felt like it was no longer tenable are now doing contract work. And I don't know if that's a bigger trend, but contract work that is basically full-time, you know, like 30 hours a week, not benefits, but seeing if the company is right for them or still playing the market, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is all a sort of like general part of the correction after, you know, quarantine and the pandemic, where everybody thought they were just going to be remote and everything was going to be cloud forever. And people hired up a lot. And now that correction's been happening for a while. AI has been a different part of that correction. You know, hopefully we're getting to a more stable part of the job market, but we'll see. We'll see if there's another, you know, bubble bursting.
Right. And I guess, Ira, you know, to get back to the discussion of stability for a second, the story about them doing layoffs was from today, right?
Yeah.
We're timestamping this April 18th, 2024. So the top story in Hacker News is Facebook announces Meta Llama 3, the most capable open available LLM. And so for free, you can use completely state-of-the-art cutting-edge stuff done by Facebook. It's already going to be built into AWS, Google Cloud, Hugging Face, Kaggle, IBM, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Snowflake, blah, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And they're adding tools to it, Code Shield, cybersecurity, eval, you know. So Facebook is giving away top of the line stuff for free.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And so that's a tough market to compete in, you know, Stable Diffusion. In some ways, its competitive edge, Ryan, was like, mm-hmm. There are no restrictions here. We're not going to tell you right. What kind of images you can create or what kind of prompts you can write. Like, this is open source software. You do with it what you will. But right. I guess maybe they didn't build a business model around it, or the CEO didn't. I'm not. Yeah, we don't know why a CEO left, or, you know, we can never really say. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, building a cool open source model or software, as we've talked about before, there's a funding problem. Open source software, right? Like, everybody loves using it. Nobody likes paying for it or maintaining right. it. So the stability folks, you know, we don't, like you said, we don't know their business model. We don't know if they even wanted a business model. Maybe they just wanted to do the research.
Right. Exactly. If that was the case, then they should not have raised money. That's the OpenAI story, is they just wanted to do research and then they raised the money and then they said, oops, now right. we have to be a for-profit, capped for-profit. Right. Excuse us while we figure out the profit right. thing.
Yeah. Probably something that you think would have come up during one of the funding rounds, but... Yeah.
Well, I mean, there they were, an 8-year-old company when they broke out. For the first 5 years, it didn't come yeah. up. It was just like, we're just chugging away. We're not doing anything that's really making news. And a few, you know, kooky billionaires support mm-hmm. our mission of creating AGI for the betterment of the world, you know? They got pretty deep before it became an issue.
Yeah. And, you know, ChatGPT came out and it was a cool toy. And unlike Midjourney, yeah. They decided to yeah. move past the toy
cool
stage.
Toy, sir? Sir, a cool toy?
I wish more of them would...
Fight in words. Fight in words.
Yeah, Stability AI raised $126 million over two rounds. That's not a ton of money, but, you know, it's a chunk of change. You know, there was October 2022, Stability AI has raised $101 million. The round was oversubscribed. Everybody wanted in. And now they're saying, we want it in. Where's your business at?
Right.
Investors are not patient. They're not patient.
Nope.
But as always, when a new big model is released from one of the big companies, Meta 3 outperforms the existing alternatives, open source alternatives, Google's Gemma and Mistral on the various MMLU and human eval and mm-hmm. math, blah, blah, blahs. I don't really put too much stock in these anymore because the tests have been out there for a while and I don't think that they translate necessarily to user success and value or to business application and value.
Sure.
But I do think it's clear everybody's making progress. And so, mm-hmm. you know, every 3 or 6 months when you release the latest greatest from a cutting edge shop, it's going to be, you know, it's going to boost on these evals. And, you know, that does add up to something. I think I mentioned before, my AI skeptic friend, you know, is finally won over by Claude Opus, Claude 3. And just sort of its facility with language and reasoning.
What was it that really like tipped the balance? Just that he felt like there was more facility there than there had been with previous models, or what?
He felt like the critiques it gave of essays and law briefs were good enough to be useful. Like, okay. I'll show it a piece of writing. It'll give me a critique. I will make the writing better. That's a simple application that I could use every day. And I actually think like there's utility there.
Yeah,
so that was totally his breakthrough moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I think all the people who are, you know, pushing AGI, like, you sort of miss the point of what's good about these right. large language models. It's that it makes things a little better, right? You can get the key points out of these research papers. You can right. simplify whatever law brief is in front of you. You can get these quick, you know, ways to right. understand it instead of spending, you know, 2-3 hours.
You can think of it as like a universal librarian. It can do great summary or bring you great knowledge. It can also be a good explainer. If it gets to the level of being sort of like a critic and like an interlocutor and like a conversation partner, I think that's where it starts to tip the scales for me to be like, well, this is something like an AGI, you know, like its intelligence is boosting my intelligence via this discourse, not just looking things up for me or summarizing.
Yeah. I mean, there's like condensing information for me, like, you know, pull the high points out of this report for me versus, you know, help me make this essay stronger, more persuasive, better organized. Those seem like different order, you know, levels of functionality for sure.
And not to say that it hasn't seen essays and law briefs before, but like what he's giving it is stuff that doesn't exist online. It's not stuff that it's trained on. It's a new, you know, it's some new case and some relatively novel, you know, scenario. So Ryan, I think your point is right that most of the utility for most people lies in the simple stuff, the low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
But it's getting to a higher order. And then, you know, there is another piece of it, which is like for me, I'm a terrible coder, but now I can make a few things. And if I was a slightly better coder, I could build bigger things or better toys, or I, you know, like I do think, you know, on the coding side, it unlocks a certain level of the ability to use new languages or acquire new skills or sort of venture a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, you know, exciting, and like being able to use natural language was sort of always a goal of some of the early programming languages, right? Instead of just doing machine language.
Here comes the old papers for computer science guy. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I think that'd be exciting. That's, you know, instead of having to figure out the esoteric, you know, priest language to understand the machine, you could just be like, hey, I'm bored. Give me a game that, you know, lets me punch dragons for money or whatever.
Yeah,
did you guys talk about kissing dragons on the last episode? Kissing, punching dragons.
The old Dragon Puncher 5000.
What have you got against dragons?
Yeah, I mean, we're all about the dragons here.
And then I will say, we just had our company all hands and, you know, a lot of discussion about this stuff. And one of the ideas that was floated across, Ryan, to your point, was somebody said, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like at this point, I think of AI as just being statistics with language that can add value, but isn't AGI. So don't fool yourself. But statistics with language turns out to be really powerful, or statistics with, you know, any kind of framework, not just language, when AI can solve a math proof that went unsolved for hundreds of years, or, you know, come up with a new drug idea that, you know, beats out everything we've seen at the trial. So generative AI, even if it doesn't know what it's doing, is powerful, right? Like its brute force ability to spit out 1,000 ideas and one of them turns out to be gold is powerful, even if the machine itself could care less about what it's saying.
Yeah. Back to the monkeys with the typewriters there.
Yes. Yes. To harness the million monkeys with the typewriters is to have to harness great power.
I think there's a question, Ira, you added to the newsletter this week about whether large language models are something like Wittgenstein, the use of language.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting one. But I think ultimately the question is like, what do you mean use?
I mean, isn't that always the question? Yeah. So the question was, does the use of AI large language models support Wittgenstein's position that, quote, meaning is use, unquote? So I am not somebody who knows really anything about Wittgenstein. My brother wrote his undergraduate thesis on Wittgenstein. So I'm going to be like harshly fact-checked if I say anything. But yeah, I mean, the idea is basically if a large language model is producing text based on statistical analysis and that the text seemed to us to be meaningful, then, you know, is the upshot of that meaning really just equates to use?
Yeah. If it's able to produce a coherent sentence, it's using language, right? Is that the essence of it?
Yeah, I think that was the essence of this person's question. You know, if like, so, okay, he talks about words being meaning families. Okay, so this is Wittgenstein's formulation. Like the specific meaning of the word is determined by, or maybe even is, its use in context. So once we get an AI that's able to like engage in that same kind of like context association, that same kind of production of language games, is, you know, what are the sort of philosophical implications of that for language?
I mean, I have to say that, yeah, I increasingly side with like this concept. I forget Ryan, who was on the podcast with us and was like, well, I guess thoughts are just a random collection of numbers, you know, moved into electrical signals. Like, it's all just chaos that we make order out of. But like, how do people come up with slang and new words? They say something in a certain context. It feels like it has a certain meaning. Other people pick it up and repeat it. And now a piece of nonsense sound has a meaning. Like, you know, like there was nothing inherent to it before. And so the use is the meaning, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a better way of describing it, right? Like, just a phrase doesn't inherently of itself mean anything until we like assign it that meaning and agree on it.
As the father of some tweens, they come home and they're like, "Dad, that was so Riz." And I'm like, "If you say so." And then I have to look it up on Urban Dictionary because Riz means something now. All right, y'all. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. We had a few laughs. Like we said, we'd love to hear from you. We spent the first third of this podcast not talking about AI. Why? Because a listener wrote in and asked us an interesting question. And if you don't, we'll talk about AI the entire time, every time, and we'll eventually end up talking about philosophy. And nobody wants to hear that. So write in and tell us what you do want to hear. Come on the show and be a participant because we enjoy it. Before signing off, I want to share a link in the show notes. Why feathers are one of evolution's cleverest inventions. It's a dope story about why feathers are so amazing. And I have to share this story. My wife has been obsessed for years with the idea of becoming friends with a crow because of various Instagram videos and because crows are so smart and we've read various books. And so for the last 6 months, 3 months, we've been leaving shiny things and a little bit of food out on the table of our back deck near our porch. And over the last week, we have made a crow friend. And now he comes every morning and he caws. And then we go outside and put the food. And then he eats. And then we stand next to him. It's very fun.
That is
amazing. That's the life goals.
I actually had a little crow friend that I fed at my old house that I
That's so cool.
Ago. Yeah. So I had to kind of wean him off. I stopped putting food out every day, but he would perch on the porch outside my office window and just caw until I came out there with dry cat food, which it turns out is
not I've been using cat food as their
fave. A lot, but something that is good for them to eat. So
yeah.
I'm excited for your crow friend.
Yeah, I've also seen the crow bringing the food to another crow. So I feel like I'm supporting a whole family here.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I love that.
All right, y'all. Enough about crows. Let's talk about Stack Overflow users. Y'all are the best. You contribute knowledge to a platform. You don't get paid for it. You get some free internet points, and you're happy with that. Awarded April 14th to Arman Ordukhani. Arman Ordukhani, thank you. A lifeboat badge, which means you've helped save this question with a great answer. How to free memory in Go. I started to learn Go, but I don't have enough free memory. Well, Arman's got a solution for you. It's got 20 points and an accepted answer. So Arman gets a lifeboat badge and has helped 30,000 people. We appreciate it, Arman. Congrats on your badge. As always, I am Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. Find me on X at Ben Popper. Email us with questions or suggestions, podcast at Stack Overflow. Like I said, we're bringing on guests and doing show topics based on your contributions. We've gotten two or three so far. We want some more. And another great way to contribute, if you're so inclined, leave us a rating and a review because it really helps.
I'm Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can find it at stackoverflow.blog. If you have an idea for something we should cover, please reach out to me on X at Arthur Donovan.
And I am Ira Maybe. I'm also on the editorial team at Stack Overflow. And if you want to talk about Corvids or anything else, you can find me on X at Ira Maybe, or you can email us some suggestions at podcast@stackoverflow.com.
All right. Hashtag Corvid chat, hashtag Corvid gang. <All right. laughs> Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will talk to you soon.
See you at the crowbar.
See you at the crowbar.